that. Okay, good vach, everybody. Good vach. It's a schuss to be back together. Matzei Shabbos Kodesh. Want to begin by always thanking the Shriers and Eliza for opening up their bias, and as well tonight, all the learning should be Le'ila Nishmas, Eliza's grandfather, whose yahrzeit was this Shabbos Kodesh, Dov Ber Ben Aaron Halevi. It's Hashem, the neshama shel Aliyah, and the schus of the Torah, and the schus of the chizik. He should be a male joy share for your beautiful mishpacha. Be zeichet to be together. There was a big tzaddik in the early 1900s, late 1800s. A goyin, Rav Naftali Trapp. He was known as the Garnat. Rav Naftali Trapp. And Rav Naftali Trapp became very, very sick. He was very ill. The doctors gave very, very little hope. They didn't think he had much time to live. And his Talmidim, of course, were davening that he should have a refuah, that he should have a Yeshua. And the Talmidim decided that they're going to go around and they're going to try to ask individuals to say that they're going to give time of their life to Rav Naftali Trapp. They're going to give weeks, months, years, that they're willing to say to the Rabbeinu Shalom, whatever I'm supposed to live, I'm going to give time of my life to Rav Naftali Trapp, that he should have a refuah and he should live longer. We see such concepts already by David HaMelech. The Tzaddikim gave years to David HaMelech. David HaMelech was supposed to be nifter immediately, and he lived 70 years. There are different medrashim where that came from, different ideas, but we see such a concept. So they were going around and Talmidim and different individuals giving weeks of their year, of their life, months of their life to the Tzaddik, Rav Naftali Trapp. And they went to the Gadol HaDor, to the Chavetz Chaim, Zchus Yagin Eleinu, Rav Yisrael Meir Kohen Kagan, to the Chavetz Chaim. And they asked the Chavetz Chaim, what time will you be willing to give some time of your life? Imagine a chash of the time of the Chavetz Chaim's life to Rav Naftali Trapp, the guy in the tzaddik. Chavetz Chaim thought about it. He stopped, he was thinking. And he looks up and he says to them, I'm going to give time for my life. I'm going to give 1 minute. 1 minute of my life. So some of us are thinking, really? Really? Only 1 minute? Only 1 minute of your life. That's it. That's all you're willing to give of yourself to another human being. 1 minute. The emissaries of Chavetz Chaim, more than anyone else, understood how chashuv, how important time is in this world. How every day, every moment needs to be productive and meaningful. And to him, 1 minute was so chashuv. To give up a minute of his life, what he could do with 1 minute, that was a tremendous matan. That was something very difficult for him to do, to even give up 1 minute. To him, that was tremendous mesiras nefesh. Tremendous self-sacrifice to give up a minute of his life. Each and every one of us has to understand how chashuv the time in this world that we have is. How important it is. And make it meaningful, make it productive. And I think we learn this from the parshios that we're in the middle of. And I say parshios because really, we just lay in today in Shul, Parshas Ve'era. It was a rainy day. I don't know how many of you are there. We're not going to ask. Don't worry. But we're in the middle of Shemos, Ve'era, Bo, Bishalach. Even going up to Yisro, and maybe even Mishpatim, is one long storyline. The storyline of Golus and Geulas Mitzrayim. And really, you know, we get even, you could get confused. Usually, hopefully, we have a little bit of knowledge in Chumash. If we asked what took place in what parsha, hopefully a lot of us should be able to know. But when it comes to the storyline here, we might get confused through the whole thing, where exactly, but we know amongst these parshas are everything that happened, all the makos, which parshas were exactly which makos. Okay, maybe we get confused, but we know Ve'era and Bo, and we know Bishalach, obviously, is Kriyas Yamsev, and Yisro is Kabbalah's Torah. But it's really one long storyline. We're living through these parshas. It's like we're living through Lel Seder, which is so beautiful. who here doesn't appreciate and enjoy and look forward to the night of Seder to talk about and build our Emunah b'Hashem. So there's so much to be learned from these parashios. So we go back to Parashat Shemos. I want to talk about one idea. During the servitude, during the slavery in Mitzrayim, the Torah, all the way in the beginning of Shemos, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, so it tells us that the Mitzrim and Paro caused us to work Avodas Parach, Vayavidu Mitzrayim es B'nei Yisrael, Bifarach. A little bit of a strange word. Avodas Parach. What is this Avodas Parach? What is Avodas Parach? What is it? Avodas work. What does Parach mean? So if you look in Rashi, Rashi tells us Parach is ba'avodah kasha, difficult work, hamifareches es aguf v'mishparto, that literally breaks our body. In other words, as we say, back-breaking labor. The avodah mitzrayim, the mitzrayim made us do back-breaking labor. That's avodah parach. That's what Rashi tells us is what parach means. Which is interesting because we also find, and the Torah could have used, avodas kasha, which is the more common word used for hard labor. So we're going to have to come back and understand that. And specifically, in lieu of the following, Rashi, if you look in Parshas Bahar, so in Parshas Bahar, it's discussing the laws of an Eved Ivri. The laws of if you owned a slave. Now, it's not really common these days, and something that we don't really have in our society, in our culture, but we find in the Torah discussions of seem to be that it was morally incorrect, and it was part of society was to have slaves at times in different ways. But there are many laws when it came to having a slave and treating our slaves, treating an eved properly with respect in the proper way. And one of those halachos in Parshas Bahar, read it end of Shishi Perchav Hey Pasuk Mem Gimel. Lo sir de bo v'farach. That same word, right? Lo sir de bo v'farach. You shouldn't cause him to work this, again, this avodas parach. So what would we think if we look in Rashi, in lieu of the Rashi we just read, in Mitzrayim, avodas parach being back-breaking labor, so it makes sense, what should we tell, what should, lo sir de bo v'farach seemingly would be, that also when you, if you own a slave, make sure you shouldn't give your slave back-breaking labor. But that's not what Rashi says. If you look in Rashi there in Parshas Bahar, Rashi says, what is avodas parach? Milacha shelo litzarach. Unnecessary work. Unnecessary labor. For example, he gives an example. Atomer lo hachem li es hakos hazeh v'uein litzarach. Heat up this cup of water for me, and you don't even need it. You're going to have him heat up the cup of water, which, by the way, to heat up a cup of water, it's not like us heat up a cup of water, meaning ichvestish, put the cup in the microwave. It would mean that he has to go and cut wood and make a fire and then heat up the water, and it's a lot of hard work. But you're going to take that cup of water, he's going to boil the water, and you're going to take it and just put it down and let it cool off. Or, Odr tachas agefen at shavo, dig a hole near this grapevine till I come. But you have no need for the hole. Don't give a slave malacha shelo litzarach. So we have to understand, Chevra, we have to understand. Rashi is pshat, and it's the same exact word, parach. The same word by avodah parach. But in Mitzrayim, he says it's referring to back-breaking labor. And in, by your own Eved Ivri, it's malacha shelo litzarach. Unnecessary, meaningless, futile labor. Why does Rashi give a different pshat? What's going on? So we have to understand and get to the root. I heard you talking before, looking the shoresh of the word. I don't know what you were even talking about, but that, we have the
GREs.
In the GRE, the shoresh, okay. Hashem. But we know if we want to understand any Hebrew word, I assume there are no Hebrew words on the GREs. We have to look for the shoresh, we have to look for the root. A lot of times if you're learning a pasuk, you're learning something, you don't know what the word means. So the first step, what we learned this at a very young age already, is try to figure out the shoresh. Trying to figure out the root, which generally is three letters, and through that we might be able to understand what the word means. We might know the root. If we're able to look through the suffixes and prefixes and find the shoresh, it will help us understand what the word means. So what does parach really mean? It can't mean both. backbreaking and futile. There must be some, or there must be some common denominator by the two, perhaps. There must be some other meaning that we understand, which Rashi is tapping into and then commenting and being mefarish and utilizing in each place differently for some reason, which we have to understand. So where else do we have the word parach? In the Beis HaMikdash, we had something called, anyone know where I'm going with this? The parochas. The parochas. In front of even Aron Kodesh, we have a parochas. But what was the parochas? The parochas was, well, later at least, a curtain that separated between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedashim. The parochas is basically the mechitza. The parochas is a separation. In other words, what parach really means is to separate. That's what a parochas does. It means to separate. To disconnect. That's what a parochas does. That's really the root of the word. And if that's the root of the word, then how does that play its role into Avodas Parach? So let's start Bahar. Why did Rashi come up with this pshat? Losir de b'farach, not being backbreaking labor, but labor that's futile, unnecessary, meaningless work. So Rashi thought to himself as follows. It would make absolutely no sense if you own a slave. And obviously you're owning that slave so that slave could be productive and could work for you and to make your life a lot easier. That's why you have the slave. And to give your slave backbreaking labor that physically would be harmful to the slave, that could hurt the slave and the slave won't be able to work for you anymore, would be ridiculous, would be contrary to the whole purpose in having the slave. So it can't be that the Torah needs to tell you that, because logically you would never do that. Upper what would you want to do to a slave? A person, God forbid, and the Torah is telling us we shouldn't, v'yareisa me'lokecha, by the way, is the end of that pasuk. You should be God-fearing, even when you have a slave, and realize that the Rabbono Shalom above you, don't be so strong above your slave. What would you want to do, perhaps? You'd want to give him meaningless work. And why would you give him meaningless work? Because parochas, you want to disconnect. You want to separate. You want to make him or her feel lowly, feel insignificant, feel worthless, so that they're more subservient to you. So that they respect you more and look at you as the man, as the master. The more you put them down, the more you raise up yourself. So you're looking to cause a parochas, a disconnect, a separation. By what? By giving them this worthless, meaningless avoda. So the Torah is telling you, don't do that. In other words, what is avodas parach really? Avodas parach would be work that causes separation, that causes disconnect, that causes to put somebody else down. So by your own slave that you own, there's no reason to give backbreaking labor. It must be you're giving meaningless labor. Rashi in Shemos, Rashi said to himself, in Mitzrayim, Paro and the Mitzrayim weren't trying to work us hard because they needed us as laborers. They were working us hard because they just wanted to lower us. They just wanted to show that they're greater than us. They were putting us in gullus because they were anti-Semitic, as we've had throughout our history, nations that tried to just lower us and put us down. And that was their entire goal. If the entire goal is to lower us, the best way to do it is giving us backbreaking labor and physically destroying us so we feel we're physically inept and we'd also be emotionally inept through that. And we'd feel lower. Their pshat could be Avodas Parach, which is also Milashon Pareches, that destroys the body, which is disconnecting from the world ultimately. But ultimately, it's one and the same, now we understand. Ultimately, the purpose is just to make us low, to cause a separation. And by the way, it's interesting to note, and this you all know, and you learned this probably all when you were in nursery and kindergarten, that the Mitzrim, besides for giving us Avodas Parach that was backbreaking labor, they also gave us Malacha Shelo Tzarach. They did that to us too, right? What am I referring to? What were the cities, what? What were the cities that we built? Peace, Tom, and Ramses. And what do we know the Medrash tells us about them? What were they built upon? Sand. Yeah, what's the thing? Quicksand. Quicksand, right? It was built on quicksand. Why would they have it being built on quicksand? You'd think, just why would they want that? That's ridiculous. If they want, they should gain something from our labor. They should gain, build. If it's on quicksand, what's going to happen to those buildings? They're going to fall to be destroyed very, very quickly. They didn't really care for our work. They didn't need our work. They were just looking to put us down. So what better way to put us down now? But in Mitzrayim was the combination. Yeah, the avodah kasha had backbreaking labor, but it was also meaningless labor. It was also useless labor. As we would walk away and feel terrible about ourselves, we know we're involved all day in doing work that's completely unproductive. It's going to lead to nothing. If we knew at least we're doing productive, we could feel good about ourselves. I could still be strong. I could stand up tall. I could look in the face of a mitzvah and feel somewhat as an equal still. But if all day long, I'm not only physically being destroyed, I'm also mentally being destroyed. Because I feel like a nothing. I feel insignificant. I'm all day being involved in meaningless pursuit. How does that make a person feel? Lower than low. Lower than low. So that was also the goal of the mitzvah. And we have to understand in our life that that is a key to our simchas achayim, a key to our happiness, and a key to the ability to just stand up tall and have the proper self-esteem that we are looking for and want. And that is to be productive individuals, to be using the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us with in a meaningful, productive way. Because when we're just wasting time and we're involved constantly in meaningless pursuits, and we look back at our day, and all day basically I've been doing things, but I'm basically building on quicksand. And I really have nothing to show for any productivity in my day. I feel lower than low. That's what the Mitzrayim tried to do to us. That's what an Eved Ivri, you're not supposed to do to your Eved Ivri, because we're not allowed to make someone feel so low. It's not what David Shter wants from us. So we should make ourselves feel so low. We should be involved all day in unproductive activity, meaningless activity. Every one of us, if we want to be besimcha, we have to feel productive. And we have to be involved in meaningful activity throughout the day, whatever it is that we're doing. And it doesn't mean necessarily that I'm zogging tilim all day. Some of us can zog tilim and we feel productive, and we should. And davening, it could be in whatever we're doing. But it has to be that we're being productive and it's meaningful. You know, every year I have this chus. I have this class in DRS. So my shiur, I teach seniors. You all remember, it wasn't so long ago when you're in your senior. And senior year, I find this every single year, specifically more so the second half of senior year, that I constantly have guy over after guy throughout the night, my shiur, the grade, whoever it is, coming over to me to talk, that are like down and out and depressed and just not happy. And you think, oh, senior year, it's like one big party. One big senior year, one big party. Right? One big party senior year. Not that you have to remember the parties. That's not what I'm talking about. So let's, you know, that would, maybe we're still doing tshuva from the parties. But the whole year is one big party. So why is everybody, why is guy after guy depressed and down? And, you know, often it's a lot of the guys, off second half of the year, guys who play on teams, on basketball team, hockey teams, and that ends, like, often February, March time, it's over. So a lot of those guys specifically, but all the guys in general. Why? Because second half of senior year, no longer do our studies mean anything. No longer do our grades mean anything. Right? Because we already applied to college. We already applied to Eretz Yisrael, to yeshivas. We got in already to wherever we want to get into, hopefully. And we know that these grades and the schoolwork at this point is meaningless. So I'm not putting any time into my work. I'm not putting any time into my learning. And like I said before, those especially play until, at least I have teams that I play on perhaps, but when that ends, I wake up in the morning, I look in the mirror, and yeah, I'm having quote unquote a good time, a chill, but the chill, let's be real, it doesn't do it for me. That's fun in the moment, but I'm feeling completely worthless. And a lot of the guys and girls at that point in one's life they're not even aware of why they feel low. They don't even know it. They need to understand, they need to talk it through. They just feel down and out. But why is it? It's because they're living unproductive lives, meaningless lives. I look in the mirror, and what do I do? What did I do all day today? I did nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. I was on my phone all day, just texting people and Snapchatting people, and played Fortnite for 4 hours, and what did I do? And Mamish did nothing all day. Or a week, or a month. Like, I haven't done, if you look back, in a month, I haven't done one productive thing, one meaningful activity. You're going to feel good about yourself? You're going to be besimcha? How could you? A life of avodas parach. A life of Avodas Baruch Hu. And each and every one of us, we need to look into our lives and our days and how we're spending our days and how we're spending our lives. The more meaningful and productive our Avoda is, the more besimcha we're going to be. The more happy we're going to be. You know, when the Mitzrim, when they wanted to make it even more difficult for us, to make the slavery even more difficult, what did they do? So we know in Perek Hey, Pasuk Yud, Parsha Shemos, Komar Paro, Eineni Nosin Lechem Tevin. What did they do? They stopped giving us Tevin. They stopped giving us the straw to make the bricks. No more Tevin. So now we had to go and even cut down all the straw and harvest the straw and be more involved in the process, put in more work, but the quota stayed the same of how much we had to get through. We just had to work harder, right? So we're working much longer hours now. And here's the obvious question. Why would they stop giving us the straw? Why not instead double the quota of bricks? Keep on giving us the straw, but double the quota of how much bricks we have to produce. Because again, they weren't looking for us to be more productive. They were looking at us just to work more and feel more useless and worthless. So the productivity, they didn't want to add that we should feel that we were more productive in the day and we've done more in the day. What we've amassed is going to be the same. We're just putting in more work to lead to what? To lead to nothing. Because they were trying to destroy our whole psyche, our whole mentality in life. And when we go through our days and our weeks and I'm not being productive, and we have to find, some of us maybe we have to look into ourselves and think about what is productive in my life? What should be meaningful in my life? How am I spending my time? What am I doing with my time? How am I growing? There's a famous story told over. I don't know the truth to it, the authenticity of it, if it ever even happened, but it was in a Soviet labor camp. And they had this individual in the labor camp. His job was to turn this wheel. And he was told what the wheel was doing was on the other side of the wall, it caused it to grind all the wheat down into all the kernels, into flour or something to this degree, right? And he was nonstop, that was his job, just to turn the, all day turn the wheel. And he was told that on the other side there was a lot going on. He was creating, let's say, this flour. And all day, for 10 hours straight a day, he would just turn a wheel. And he was a besimcha guy under his situation. He was happy. He was good. And every day, that was his job. Everybody had different jobs. His job was to turn the wheel. One day, one of the soldiers, after him doing this for about 10 years, they take him and they say, I want to show you. Have you ever seen what all that you're doing? Everything that's going on the other side of the wall? He said, no, no one's ever showed me. I just know. I've been told. So there's a door in the corner. It's locked. He never could go through. He unlocks the door and takes him through the other side. There's nothing on the other side of the wall. Absolutely nothing. For 10 years straight, 10 hours a day, he was turning a wheel. He mamish on the spot fainted and passed away. He couldn't handle it. Now Lemaisa, even if he was creating all this flour or whatever he was being told he was creating, what did that do for him? Nothing. He wasn't the one getting it. But at least his whole life, for 10 years, he's feeling that he's involved in a productive, meaningful activity. The moment he was enlightened that his life was a life of useless, purposeless, meaningless activity, he couldn't handle it, he felt so lonely, he just fainted and gave up on life. We have to be involved in meaningful activity, productive activity. Time is too precious not to. Share with you an amazing remez. We say we're learning this all from Avodas Parach. That we're calling Parach, ultimately, Avoda that will separate us and make us feel useless, whether it's through backbreaking labor, whether it's Avodas Shel Tzarach, that's what Avodas Parach is. Now we know there are a lot of deep ways to learn Torah. We often share gematrias here, which is a deeper way of learning Torah and seeing depth within the Torah. There's also a connection called Atbash. We've used this before. I don't know how many of you were here or learned this before with us. Atbash. What is Atbash? Atbash means that the letters in the Torah, the first letters, align to the later letters. So Aleph, At is Aleph Tof, meaning Aleph could be interchangeable with the Tof. And Beis could be interchangeable with a Shin. Right? And Gimel would be with a Resh. And so on and so forth. You just go through the whole alphabet until the middle two letters meet. And you'll find, which is basically the middle two letters, the Chaf and Lamed. So Chaf is connected to Lamed. And all the letters in the Aleph Beis, they have their, whatever you want to call it, their mirror image, the Chavrusa, their partner in the back end of the Aleph Beis. Aleph is tough, and there's a lot we learn from here. It's a deeper way of learning Torah, but it's such a concept, Atbash. So if you take Atbash of the word Perach, Pei, Reish, Chaf, Pei is Keneged Vav, Vav is Pei, Reish, we just said, is Keneged, we just said it, what? Gimel. And we also said, what? Chaf is Keneged, Lamed. So the letters of Parach, the Atbash, are Vav, Gimel, Lamed. What's Gematria of Vav, Gimel, Lamed? Not a difficult 39. One. 39, right? Vav is 6, Gimel is 3, and Lamed is 30, 39. When you hear 39, we just went through Shabbos Kodesh. Every number should trigger something as a Yid. Right, we once said before, I don't know if you remember and who was there, but Pesach time, we definitely said this over here once, unless it was by Danielle's house, by the older house, I don't remember. We definitely shared this Torah once. Rav Ram Shor says an incredible idea. He says, we're talking Lel Seder. This is Pesach time. We go through these parashas, it's Pesach time. You'll remember this, you'll tell this over at your Seder this year. Incredible. Wherever you are, your Seder, you tell this over. Mom, is this Torah, this is what the whole Seder is about. It says, Lel Seder, we go through Lel Seder, we have all these beautiful, we're eating matzah, mar, and sipur, you see the tzrayim. Mom, it's an incredible night, right? Beautiful night with the family. And what's the culmination? You think the pinnacle? All at the end, we sing a song, Echad Mi Yodea. Who knows one? Some sing it in English, in Hebrew. Okay, I don't know how many of you are up at that point anymore, you know, but whoever's there, it's fun, it's beautiful. That being said, it sounds like a nursery rhyme. You know, let's be real. That's what we're ending our Seder as. Who knows one? I know one. One is Hashem. One is it? Really? Who knows two? I know two. Who knows three? I know three. Three of the Avos. Like, really? Mamish, I mean, great. Yeah. Like when your three-year-old brother comes home from school with that, it's great. But that's what we're all singing together. This is the highlight. It's like Kodesh Kodashim of the Seder. So Rav Ram Shor, he says, so beautiful. Rav Ram Shor says, all Lel Seder, what's the avoda? It's to build the Muna, to build the closeness with Hashem, to get closer and closer to the Rebbeinu Shalom. If you're so close to the Rebbeinu Shalom, all you could think about is Torah, mitzvahs, and closeness to Hashem. That's what my life is. That's where we should be. I don't mean not be normal and have a good time with your friends and family, but Mamish Kedusha and Ruchnias is what we're all about. That's what it should be. That's Mamish, what our goal is. Lel Seder. That's what our goal is, Lel Seder. So you know, if you're somebody so one with Hashem and one with Torah mitzvahs, and you hear numbers, it would trigger Kedusha. Right? Somebody who's Lahavdil, I don't know how many of you are baseball fans, or but we'll give an example, you know, the Yankees. So all players, they wear numbers, right? So if you're really a big Yankee fan, if you hear the number 7, you think immediately, like not even if it's in contact with the Yankees, you just think Mickey Mantle. That's when you see 7, I'm just thinking about Mickey Mantle. And 6, Yogi Berra. And 2, maybe you're more familiar with, Derek Jeter. Right? That's how like a Yankee fan thinks. A big Yankee fan, I'm saying. Someone who's really like in love with it. That's their life. So they hear these numbers, they think about these players. So we in life should be so one with, if I hear 1, all I can think is the only one is God. And I hear 2, I think about the Luchos. And I hear 3, I think about the Avos. And I hear 4, I think about the Emos. Mom, that's how a Yid should think. Now that only, the song only goes up to 13. You know, otherwise we'd be there all night. I don't know where you're going to stop. Especially because we repeat them all every time, right? I think it's a lesson in Chazara. But Lameisa, so a Yid here is 39. What do you think? Lamed Tes Malachos. There are 39 Malachos. 39 laws of Shabbos that we're not allowed to perform on Shabbos. 39. So the Atbash of Parach is 39. I would think right about 39 malachas. What are the 39 malachas? I'm sure some of you have learned a little bit of the depth of the 39 malachas, not just what they are, but we know specifically on a Torah level, Meleches Machsheves Astra Torah. What does that mean? All the 39 malachas have to be thought out, productive, meaningful activities. That's why it is. Davar Shel Iskayim, something that's not going to stay for a long time, might be even mutter, asr mei drabanan, if it's not going to stay for a long time, if it's not substantial, if it's not productive, if it's not meaningful, it's not one of the 39 malachas. 39 malachas are all malachas machsheves, they're thought out productive activity. So the apash of what? Of parach, is telling us this is the mirror of it. This is what the opposite of it in a certain sense. What are we supposed to strive for? The opposite of what is parach, which is what? Lamites. To live a life of those lamites malachos. Obviously on Shabbos they're usher, so that I could be kula ruchni. But the lesson of them is, every moment of my life should be productive, should be meaningful. Not to waste a second. Not to waste a moment. How do we get to this? How are we going to get to that point? How are we going to make sure that we're utilizing our time and living meaningful moments? So I think pshat is as follows. You know, one of the makos we read about this morning was Barad. You all know what Barad, right? Hail. It was very miraculous hail. It was hail that was ice with fire inside. Nisim gluyim. So the pasuk, the Torah tells us that those mitzrim, those Egyptians that had yiras shemayim, that had fear of Hashem, those mitzrim that had yiras shemayim, so they brought in their cattle already when Moshe warned them about Barad. They brought in their cattle. They didn't want the cattle to be destroyed by the hail. And those mitzrim that didn't have yiras shemayim, they left them outside. And they already had very many makos already. Dom, Sardei, Akinim, Arvei, they already went through many makos. So it was pretty clear that this was going to occur. But those who really didn't fear God, they left them outside. So the Medrash that says, who is an example of someone who had yiras Hashem, had fear of Hashem, and brought the cattle inside? Who is an example? Eov. Eov brought his cattle inside. Eov was one of the advisors of Paro. And who was another advisor of Paro that didn't have yiras shemayim and kept his cattle outside, the Medrash says? Bilam. Bilam kept his cattle outside. So the obvious question is, really, Bilam? You really? Was it worth it to you? Like, think about it for a moment. You're watching. You were there. Everything Moshe says already is happening. He says the water's going to turn to blood. Turns into blood. There's going to be frogs. There's going to be lice. Everything exactly as he says it. He's 6 for 6. Batting 100. Not like 900%. Not batting 100. Is you really worth the risk? You want to spit in God's face? Like what's the point? You're the one losing out. Worst case scenario, it doesn't happen. You lost out by brother. It's like, why do you want to lose out? Why would you not recognize and realize this is happening and take your cattle inside? What are you doing, Bilam? It's the Hilga Chavetz Chaim, he says so beautifully. If you look in Parshas Balak, which is the parsha of Bilam, where Bilam tries to curse Bnei Yisrael. So in the Torah, if you looked in a real Sefer Torah, I don't know if you've ever seen inside a real Sefer Torah, but if you look in a real Sefer Torah, there are, throughout Sefer Torah, we spoke about this actually a few weeks ago, but there are spaces. Did I say it over here? About a different year? I don't remember, but whatever it is, okay. There are spaces in the Torah. I think it was a different year. I don't know how many you've heard, but there are spaces. There are times when there are spaces in Torah, in between parshios for sure, besides for by parshios Vayichi, but even that, within each parsha, there are spaces at times. Why are there spaces? So Rashi, the beginning of Vayikra, tells us why there are spaces. All the way, the first one of the first Rashis in all of Vayikra. Mahu yof sakos, litein revach l'moshe l'sbonein, bin parsha l'parsha bin l'inyan. To give time to Moshe to think about it, to contemplate what he just was teaching, what he was just learning. When we're learning, you need time to think. You need time to internalize, to think through what you've learned, so that it can be meaningful, so that it can be part of who you are. And Moshe was given that opportunity. That's what the spaces in the Torah are. All of Balak, if you looked in a Sefer Torah, there are no spaces. The Chafetz Chaim says, you know what that's telling us? What's that hinting to us? Bilam was an individual who never stopped to think. He just was doing and doing and doing. So when you never stop to think, how could you internalize the message that Hashem is trying to send you and become a better person and be a person that's doing what's right? So you never stop to even think about, oh wow, there's just been six makos and they're all 100% right. Maybe there is a God. Maybe I should be doing that. He didn't stop to think even about that. He just was set in his ways and he continued to do impulsively without any thought, out of rote, mechanically. I believe deeply a key, the key maybe, to living a meaningful, productive life, to making the most of the moments of life, is having time to do cheshbon ha-nefesh, having time to think about our lives, to think about our days, to think about our weeks, to think, am I doing productive activity? Am I involved in meaningful activity? Or is my life avodas parach? I have to first stop and think about it and set it up in a way that I will be productive and living meaningful moments and days and hours and weeks. You know, we see this as well. There's a Gemara in Brachos that says, if you take very big steps on Shabbos, it's hard to understand this literally. If you take big steps on Shabbos, you're going to lose part 1/500 of your eyesight. The idea is that if you put the grape juice near your eyes by Kiddush, by Avdallah, I'm sure you've seen people do that, that it brings back the eyesight. Obviously, this is all very, very Kabbalistic. What does it mean you take very big steps, you're going to lose some of your eyesight? So perhaps we could suggest, what is it when a person takes big steps? When you basically you're running, you're not being deliberate, you're not being thought out, you're just going, you're just moving. When you're just moving, you lose your perspective of life. The ability to see, not physically see, but to understand the Eine HaSeichel, the eye of the mind. You're not thinking about your life. And when we're not thinking about our life, we are risking leading meaningless, useless lives of Avodas Parach. Without having a paro telling us to do it. We're doing it to ourselves. God forbid. We have to be thinking individuals. We have to be thought out. Rav Schwab, he once met the Chafetz Chaim, Shimon Schwab. And he asked the Chafetz Chaim, we know, and this is going to be in two more parshas, parshas Bishalach, we have the man. And by the man, we know that the man tasted like anything you wanted it to, right? Mamish, anything you wanted the man to taste like. What it tastes like. So Rav Schwab asked the Chofetz Chaim an interesting question. I don't know if anyone in this room ever thought about it before. He asked the Chofetz Chaim, what did the man taste like if you didn't think about anything? So if I was thinking about pizza, it would taste like pizza. And if I was thinking about chvesnish, a nice piece of delicious piece of salmon, it tastes like salmon. Filet mignon. Right? What about if you weren't thinking about it? You weren't thinking about anything. You just popped it without thinking. You popped the man. You made your bracha. Hopefully, Avada, you made a bracha. What a schus to make a bracha when we eat. I mean, such a schus to make a bracha when we eat and elevate everything we do. Make it machshavit and make it important and make it another way to connect to Hashem when you make a bracha. I think I shared this story once, but I'm just thinking about it now. I was once on an airplane years ago, going back from a chasana. It was from Detroit. Talmud of mine's chasen in Detroit, and I'm sitting on the airplane. It's a short flight. I was all the way inside against the window, which on a longer flight I'd feel like suffocated. I don't like that. I like to be in the aisle. That's personally, but like on a short flight, an hour, okay, I could do it. You know, it's all good. Anyways, it's a very short flight. So I'm going, and I remember I was learning Mishnayos on the flight, and they come around to giving out drinks, and I had this. A man probably in his 20s next to me, and then there was a young woman probably also in her 20s next to him. She was like on a laptop watching some movie. He was, I think, reading a book, if I'm not mistaken, whatever it was. And I remember they order. I don't remember what the woman ordered. The man, I got a chesnesh, maybe a Diet Coke. And the man, he asked for wine. And right away I was like very taken aback. Now I understand it's different worlds and different culture, but like, to us, wine is like something very chashiv, you know? I make Kiddush on wine. I make Avdallah on wine. I hold a kiss of wine at a bris milah when I make brachas. On a plane going from Detroit to New York, have a cup of wine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but to me, like in my life, wine is something that's kishal bracha. But I see more than that, he takes a cup of wine, it's like in this chvesnes, you know, in a plastic cup, and he just downs it. No bracha. Mamish, no bracha. And again, he wasn't Jewish. I'm not judging him, obviously. He shouldn't have made a bracha. But I'm not used to eating with people who are not Jewish. And I was like, just watching, and it, like, in Mamish, I was very taken aback that somebody could just like drink without a bracha. And it like hit me very strongly, the schus we have, that we could take a drink on an airplane and we're connecting to Hashem. And this guy, his whole life is like physical pleasure. That's it. That's all he's got. That's why I'm so sad. I don't know, it was just something very, it was very enlightening. It was very enlightening. Again, not that I'm judging him, that's a, but you hear what I'm saying. For us just to understand how chashiv it is that we have this chus that whatever we do to elevate it, to get close to Hashem, it's amazing. So you made your bracha on the mon, and you didn't think about what you want it to taste like. Nothing. So what's it going to taste like? The Chafetz Chaim said back, if you don't think about what the man tastes like, then it's tasteless. If you weren't thinking, it's tasteless. There's no backdrop of a taste. There's no mode, there's nothing that it tastes like if you don't think. You know what he's saying to Rav Schwab? If you're not thinking, life is tasteless. If you're not thinking about your life, it's going to be useless and worthless. We have to stop and think and make sure that we're living meaningful, productive lives. Otherwise, it will be tasteless. Not to chas v'sholom live in a life of avodas parach, of meaningless, futile activity. And I recently saw the following story. I want to share it with everybody. I took a lot of chizik from it. And I want to read it, but then I want to explain how I think we could take it. Many, many years ago, there was once a sword crafter. And he was known worldwide by his reputation for creating these swords that were genius level. People revered this man. He was the master craftsperson of sword people. Okay, I don't know if we know any sword people, but he was a sword maker. He was the best in the world at what he did. One day there was a great king, and the great king heard about the sword crafter, who was playing at Picasso level. He asked, "I must meet this man." So the king's people went out and found the sword crafter in a very small village. And they brought the sword crafter to meet the king. The sword crafter came in, he was very humble, he was very gentle. The king in return was also very gracious and welcoming. Then the king asked the sword crafter his favorite question when he would meet a master. He said, "Sword crafter, what is the secret to your extraordinary excellence at what you do?" The sword crafter said, "Well, it's very simple, king." He said, "Ever since I was a young child, I was exposed to the craft of making swords. And," he said, "I fell in love with it. It didn't only speak to my head and my logic. It spoke to me at the most deep and soulful level. It spoke to my heart." He said, "When I was a young child, I made a decision that I would be the master sword crafter. So," he said, "as I grew up, I read books on sword crafting. If something did not relate to sword crafting, if it did not have the word sword in it, if it did not look like a sword, if it had nothing to do with the art of sword crafting, I did not spend my time with it. That is the secret to my mastery." See, if you want to be successful in anything in this world, you can't just do it on the side. You have to live it. You have to be it, in it. You have to be living it 24/7. So what does that mean to us? Why am I reading you the story now? I think to us as well, we each have to use, as we're saying, time to do cheshbon nefesh. Time to think. And what are we supposed to be thinking? To think about our lives and what our lives are about and how we can make our lives more meaningful, more productive. Because the more we're taking that time that we're blessed with making meaningful and productive time, in whatever way that is, whether it be in our family lives, whether it be in our relationship with Hashem, whether it be in helping other people, whatever area it is. But we should be thinking about what it is that in my life, and it could be more, it doesn't have to be like him, so in a vacuum, one thing to be a sword crafter. I might have, and when I start thinking about it, 5 or 6 things that are very important to me, that I'm machshiv, that I believe are ways that I could spend my time in a very meaningful, productive way. But then I have to make sure that my life and my time is spent only on those 5, 6 things. And get rid of, and try to, mamish, get rid of anything in my life that's not those things. Because those are meaningless, futile, worthless activities. that will make me feel worthless and will take away from the ability to be successful in all that is important to me. So, Mirtz Hashem, we should be Zocha. As we're going through these parashios, we relive the parashios of Golus and Geula. If Golus Mitzrayim, we're saying tonight, the biggest Golus is living a worthless, meaningless life. So we have to make sure we're living, even while we're still in Golus. But every individual can live in Geula within Golus. We can live a Chai Olam Haba, as we say, by living meaningful, productive days, meaningful, productive hours, making the most of every minute that Hashem gives us. And that's Chus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will see that we're already living a life of Geula within Golus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say it's time for the ultimate Geula with Mashiach Zidkeinu B'mehera V'yameinu. We should have a beautiful, wonderful week, everyone.